equal time. Another viewpoint, other considerations. Equal time.
Good afternoon, I'm Carl Ettenauer, your host for Equal Time Radio on Mondays. My theme, as usual, is energy, food, and the local economy at the end of the age of oil. I have a blog about the same theme. It's at the Vermont Commons website, vtcommons.org/blog. I'm one of the many bloggers there, so look for the blogs that begin relocalizing Vermont in the title line. Also, the audio from this show and also Travin's Equal Time shows on Tuesdays is posted at the Equal Time Radio website. That's equaltimeradio.com. Got a great show coming up today. The theme is Solar Festival. This last weekend, Friday through Sunday, was the 15th annual Solar Fest down in Tynemouth in Rutland County. And it's a music festival. It's a solar-powered music festival. They've got PV panels up all over the place to provide power for the lights in the evening. Of course, they have some batteries for the audio. They have not only music, they have fun for the kids. There's a kids' corner where there are puppet shows and storytelling and so on going on throughout the day. There's one guy that just wanders around with a pocket full of balloons and funny red nose and card tricks and all sorts of games to play with kids. And wherever he encounters kids, he creates fun. And they've been going so long now, 15 years, they even have what they call a Solar Fest generation, kids who've grown up knowing Solar Fest every year. And so they have a special series of workshops for them because some of them may not be interested in the other workshops, which are practical workshops on how to put solar panels on your homes, or more philosophical workshops about sustainability, or a whole track on sustainable agriculture. Kids might not be quite ready for those, but they might be feeling a little too old to go to the kids' corner and watch the puppet show one more year. So they got a special series of workshops targeted for those in between late teens, early 20s kids. So what we're going to do today is have a couple of the presenters who are at the Solar Fest come and talk to us about, one will talk to us about exactly what he was presenting down at Solar Fest, and the other will sort of riff on it. Vermont author Ron Krupp, he wrote The Woodchuck's Guide to Gardening, and he's going to talk about his new book, which he also presented at Solar Fest. It's called Lifting the Yoke, Local Solutions to America's Farm and Food Crisis. Our second guest will be another Vermont author. He's Jim Merkel. He wrote the book Radical Simplicity. He gave a presentation on that at Solar Fest. He actually gave a total of three presentations at Solar Fest. I booked him on right now because this month, July 2009, marks the 20th anniversary of his experiment, living simply on just $5,000 a year. So we'll hear from him on why he chose to do that, how he does it, what it's like, and whether he'd recommend it to anybody else. Also, the keynote speaker from Solar Fest on Saturday was Amy Goodman. She's a host of Democracy Now! Heard on weekdays at 5:30 here on Radio Vermont. And I sat down on Saturday afternoon and talked to her a little bit about how she chooses the energy issues to cover on Democracy Now! And what the role of independent media is in promoting different views of energy than you might get from the corporate media. So we'll be hearing that interview with Amy Goodman, or at least portions thereof, just after the 1:30 break before we bring up Jim Merkel. And right now we have on the line Vermont author Ron Krupp. Ron, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So you've got this nice thick three-part book, very well illustrated, called Lifting the Yoke, Local Solutions to America's Farm and Food Crisis. And it's interesting because it is an analysis of the American food system, but it's very much rooted in Vermont. To tell us about the book.
Well, I wanted to cover three areas in the book. One was globalization and how the global food corporations, such as Monsanto, Cargill, Philip Morris, McDonald's, and other corporations such as Walmart, in cahoots with the federal government, pretty much control our food system. I think we're between 90-95% dependent on the global food system, and I call the corporate food system the corporate agricultural industrial machine. Some people call it industrial ag. And their lobbyists influence legislation in the halls of Congress. A similar scenario exists with energy, insurance, investment companies, and the pharmaceutical industry. So I go into the globalization of food. I talk about how many of these corporations control the organic foods as well. The second part of the book, I talk about hunger and obesity, and bring up such facts as like the fact that diabetes has doubled in the past 10 years, and 25% of four-year-olds in the U.S. are obese. And I also go into world hunger and hunger in Vermont. 1 in 10 Vermonters is on food stamps. Last year, 25% of Vermonters had to choose between heat and food. And one more shocking statistic is the fact that if things keep going the way they are, if we keep eating the heavy fat sugary foods the way we do, our children won't live as long as us, and that's pretty provocative. The third part of the book, in the second part of the book, I do go a lot into farm-to-school solutions, and in the third part of the book, I talk about local food solutions. And I've been involved with this movement since the early 70s when I started the Brattleboro Farmers Market. There's a lot going on in Vermont today. It's really a model for the rest of the country. There are now meetings to create regional food hubs, and many of these regional food hubs are now meeting as one group looking at promoting fair prices for farmers, trying to increase regional food systems. I was in Rutland the other night, and a young woman was talking about the food system, the food hub system in Rutland, and the need for better storage facilities, such as freezing. Even though we now have a mobile freeze unit that goes around the state, it can only serve a certain number of folks. And so we really need processing centers throughout the state. In a way, we need to do it the way we used to do it. We need to have canneries, mills, processing centers, slaughterhouses. All of those things are needed if you're going to replace, to a certain extent, the global food system. I'll stop talking and let you ask me questions, because I can go on and on here.
Very good. Well, I asked you for an overview of the book, and that was an excellent job on the three parts. Let's go back. I want to spend a lot of time on the solutions part of it, because I think that's really valuable. But before we get there, Ron Krupp, let's talk about the first part, the globalization of food and farming. I want to focus in on your section on the ominous trends in the organic foods industry, which you mentioned just a few minutes ago. Now, for those of us who have been following the details of the federal organic standards and the whole discussion about whether to have federal standards, and if so, what should they be, and over the decades, it's not uncommon to hear the word ominous and organic in the same sentence. But for the mainstream media, for most people, ominous and organic don't seem to go together very often. Can you explain what you mean?
Well, basically what I'm saying is that the organic food movement has been taken over by the likes of General Mills and Kraft and Philip Morris, and Ben & Jerry's was bought out, Stonyfield Yogurt was bought out. I think they still try to serve, they try to provide places for markets for dairy farmers locally, and in general they provide a better price for milk. But it's the fact is that if you take like Earth's Best Baby Foods, which was bought out two or three times, it started in Vermont, it's now in California, or Annie's Naturals, which was in Calais, is now in California. Many of these, many of the initiatives, Organic Cal, which started in Vermont, is now owned by Horizon, which is owned by Dean Foods. They probably control around 75% of the processing of milk in this country. So a lot of initiatives which started here are now owned by multinational global food corporations. And you can, you know, you can go down the list. You know, one like Muir Glen was, or I think Cascadian Farm was bought out by Muir Glen, which was bought out by General Foods. It just goes on. And these folks are really smart at what they do. They have good marketing, and if you're going to challenge that food system, you have to do a better or as good or a better job than them. And it's a real challenge. I mean, you have Walmart is probably the largest distributor of organic foods in the country. I think they even sell more than Whole Foods, which I just heard the other day was coming to South Burlington in the next couple years. What is that going to mean for local farmers?
I think you capture the trend in organic foods very well in the succinct observation that the organic tomato company Muir Glen was bought by Cascadian Farms and then General Mills.
Oh, it's part. Yeah, okay.
Bought Cascadian Farms. I mean, that really shows the big fish swallowing the smaller fish and then being swallowed by the huge fish. Now, where do you fall on in the discussion about local versus organic food?
Well, I tend to, my belief is that you go as local as you can, even if it's not 100% organic. And there's also the question of people affordability. A lot of people can't afford the high price of organic food. Sometimes when they go to the farmer's market, it's really out of price, and so it's difficult for people with lower incomes. But I would say that I tend to want to buy local, and again, even if it's not 100% organic. A lot of some farmers don't want to go through organic certification. Their customers know their farms; they've been to the farms. They know that they don't use a lot of or they don't use herbicides and pesticides, and they'll buy directly from the farmer, or they know that the farmer who shows up at the farmer's market, they know about how they, you know, produce those vegetables or beef or pork or whatever, and so I tend to take a more middle of the road position. I'd prefer to buy, make sure that it's first, it's local, and then if it's organic, that's great, as long as I can afford it. I'm not knocking the farmers that are trying to make a living. Don't get me wrong. People have to pay their bills, and they want to be able to send their kids to school and take a vacation now and then, but there's also the question of affordability. So I think that's one of the dilemmas in the organic local food movement.
Where I am in that is just as a little homesteader, and occasionally I produce more than I can use. I'm not certified organic. It doesn't make sense for me to do that for the almost nothing that I sell. And in fact, I'm about to slaughter some chickens, a little more than I need. So I let some of my neighbors know and told them I've been feeding them organic feed. They have access to pasture. They'll be in a chicken tractor very soon, so they'll be on pasture 24 hours a day then. And they got conventional feed during their first week or two of life. And neighbors know that, and they can choose on that basis. And I've got a number of people saying, yeah, I want to have one of those very local chickens raised in the neighborhood.
Well, there was the chicken event a few years ago in Waitsfield where American Flatbread wanted to purchase chickens from, I think it was a local farmer.
Right across the road.
Right across the road, and I have a great picture in the book with a smile on the local policeman's face, serving the papers to George, saying, "You can't buy local chicken." And maybe you were at that event. There were a lot of people, and eventually the legislature, I mean, they passed a bill in the legislature allowing farmers to slaughter a certain number of chickens and sell them locally. And I mean, it's interesting because I have friends that have moved here from Nicaragua, and they used to say to me, "Boy, your chickens taste sort of strange here, the ones, those big plump ones you buy in the supermarket." I said, "Yeah, I know they're all full of hormones and chemicals, and I used to be a commercial grower, so I raised everything, and I know the difference in the taste between local chicken and the chicken that you buy in the supermarket."
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Ron Krupp. He's the author of Lifting the Yoke, Local Solutions to America's Farm and Food Crisis. I'm Carl Ettenair. The show is Equal Time, and love to have you call in with your comments or questions. The number is 244-1777, or if you're outside the Waterbury calling area, call us toll-free, 877-291-8255. We're going to go to Woodbury, where Ray's on the line. Hello, Ray.
Hey, how you doing this morning?
Good, thanks. What's your question?
Well, it's not a question. It's more of a comment and an observation. He was talking about the diabetes and, you know, the obesity that is supposedly the cause of this great, and I consider it an epidemic. I'm a Vietnam veteran who has, unfortunately, both types of diabetes caused by the dioxin Agent Orange. Now, if people would look around them and remember back in the 70s and 80s, all the power lines, the right-of-ways for the railroad, the border lines, you know, between Canada and us, that was kept clean by Agent Orange. They were dumping Agent Orange in the United States like it was water.
So do you see a connection between that and the epidemic of diabetes?
Absolutely. I don't see how they can't. It's so tied in that it's the only thing that the VA automatically gives. If you were in Vietnam and come down with diabetes, you automatically get a 30% disability.
Interesting.
That's how close they're entwined.
Ron Krupp, what do you think of that?
Well,
I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks for your call, Ray.
Well, I'm not an expert on that. I know who produced Agent Orange, and that's Monsanto. And now they're producing most of the genetically modified seeds.
Wasn't it Dow who produced Agent Orange?
Maybe I'm, you know, I could be incorrect. I thought it was Monsanto. In either case, I can't comment on the connection between Agent Orange and diabetes. I just don't know enough about that. What I can talk about is the increase in the amount of diabetes, and I said the diabetes has doubled in the last 10 years. That's pretty shocking. Shocking statistic.
Yes.
I mean, you can throw out all these statistics. For example, one of the interesting ones is that the corn used to make a 25-gallon tank of ethanol would feed one person for a year. That ethanol is being produced in probably 60 to 70% of the cases with genetically modified seeds. If the corn isn't used for ethanol, it goes into the Happy Meal, which the cows are fed on corn. The fries are fried in corn and soybean, and the sugar from those the soft drinks is high fructose corn syrup. And there isn't much question about the low nutritional value of that and the increase in obesity. There's a direct connection between the foods we eat and the obesity that we now suffer with heart disease and diabetes. I mean, all you have to do is look at the pictures of your grandparents to see the difference in weight, in the difference in weight gain. So it doesn't take a rocket science to know about the connection between obesity and these high-fat, high-sugar foods that we're eating. And a lot of that comes from, again, genetically modified seeds, which is produced by Monsanto. They even bought out Syngenta, which was the largest producer of commercial seeds.
We've got another caller for you, Ron. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Over in Starkesboro, we've got, is it Rick?
Rich.
Hello, yeah, Rich.
This is Rich from Starkesboro. I was listening to a couple of parts there where the person was mentioning about how the organic food there companies aren't really up and up anymore. Like one of the things, I think he also talked about how some of the wrong companies got bought out by these big companies. And one of the companies I remember was After the Fall Juices, which used to make some nut juice and so forth. If you go into one of those stores now, if you look at, like, there's only like 3% of all the juice bottles on the shelf will accept pure juice, not from concentrate. Most of the main ingredients, most of this stuff is grape juice. You know, if you go to any one of these organic hippie stores, and so I kind of want to just corroborate what he was saying. And the other thing is some of the basic food items in the stores has gone really up in price. Almost any food that you want to go in the store sells for over $2 a pound, and that includes things like saltine crackers and rum and noodles, which I remember I used to buy 7 packages of those for $1, and now I think I saw it for like $1.59 now for just one. And it seems like the whoever's have kind of made it difficult for people that are on a limited budget to survive and keep their stomachs full, at least. That's about all I want to say.
Okay, Rich, thanks for your call, corroborating some of the observations that Ron Krupp has made. Ron Krupp is our guest. He's the author of Lifting the Yoke, Local Solutions to America's Farm and Food Crisis. And now we're kind of running out of time for your part of the show, Ron, so I want to make sure that we get to the solutions part of your book. The third part of the book is all about local solutions, and you set a 25% change challenge. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, it's really hard to know how dependent we are on outside food sources. I've heard figures from 90 to 98%. So let's just say, for where we're at, we're 90% dependent. Well, if we could cut the food margin down to 70 to 75%, which I think is pretty realistic, we could provide a good income or a decent income for farmers. We could keep the land open. We could provide healthy food to people. I mean, even though Vermont's 1/500th of the population, Vermont is very unique per capita, and that leads the nation in the consumption of local foods. When you talk about artisan cheese makers, beer makers, bread makers, again, we lead the nation. And yet we have a long way to go. And I think we have tremendous challenges. Vermont is 31st when it comes to being able to produce enough eggs, chickens, pork, you name it, to feed the people. But there are some really exciting developments. Like I said, a lot of bread makers, cheese makers, more farmers markets, more community-supported agricultural initiatives than any other part of the country. And regionally, we've developed these food hubs, and they're meeting on a regular basis to deal with questions like canning, freezing, putting food by, distribution. And these groups are meeting now regularly, people like NOFA Vermont and the Vermont Agency of Ag and Foodworks in Montpelier. There's so many exciting changes, it's hard to keep up with them. So I think we're moving in the right direction. But if you're going to create another model, another model other than the global food system, you have to have a density of farmers, you have to have apprenticeship programs, you need organizations, you need support and grants from both the state, federal, and local sources. It's really exciting to see what's going on. I couldn't even finish the book because, I didn't know where to stop, and that's why in my book, Lifting the Yoke, I have a website in which I can keep people abreast of what's happening in Vermont. So it's an exciting time. To me, it's like a second revolution from the early 70s, when a lot of us young hippies in those days, who are old hippies now, I should say, created farmers markets and started food co-ops. A lot's changed since then, and a lot of young people are involved, and I just say it's an exciting time to be here and see all that energy that's going into these regional food systems.
Ron Krupp, why don't you give us a website for your book?
Well, it's called www.liftingtheyoke.com.
Liftingtheyoke.com, and that's yoke, Y-O-K-E, no eggs involved here.
No eggs. Yep. No eggs involved. And my book, you can pick up my book at the local bookstores and gift shops and farm centers throughout the state. Well, and I appreciate the time you've given me today.
Well, thanks very much, Ron Krupp, for joining us. Ron Krupp, again, is the author of Lifting the Yoke, Local Solutions to America's Farm and Food Crisis. And it's really, it's focused on America, but really highly focused on Vermont. If you want a good overview of what's happening with food systems and a good picture of what food systems need to comprise, turn to Ron's book. Ron, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thanks, Carl. Mm-hmm.